This is an ABC podcast.
Tala for lover and welcome to Pacific Beat. I'm Talia Olatia. Today on the program, two confirmed COVID-19 cases amongst Guam's homeless community is raising concerns about how the virus is spreading. We're told to self-isolate in our homes, but what happens when you don't have a home to self-isolate in? We'll talk about it. And talking about coronavirus messages that don't necessarily translate, you'll also hear why the Pacific Disability Forum is urging all Pacific governments and territories to ensure that persons with disabilities are included in their COVID-19 planning, response and actions.
For me, myself, I'm a woman with a visual impairment, and one of the don'ts is nobody touching, or but then I need to hold by the elbow. Quite challenging for us persons with disability. Yeah?
And you'll also hear about the Kingdom Community Life Care Group in the Brisbane city of Logan, who's trying to help young Pacifica and Māori youth turn their lives around.
Most of these children, they've had to fend for themselves. They've developed a lifestyle for survival. When they get released from juvenile justice, 72 hours, if we don't have a safe place, they end up back in the system, and it's an everlasting revolving door.
Those stories and a recovered green sea turtle coming up on Pacific Beat. But first, the latest news on COVID-19 from around the region.
You're listening to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
As Guam confirmed its second death related to COVID-19 last night, the head of the World Health Organization for the Western Pacific warned the region to be ready for a long battle. Authorities say the 79-year-old Guam man had underlying health issues that were compounded by COVID-19. Crucially, though, he's had no recent travel history, and authorities believe he probably contracted COVID-19 from someone else locally, what officials are calling community transmission. These community transmission numbers in the Pacific are still small compared to other countries globally, but WHO's Dr. Takeshi Kasai, who's the regional director in the Western Pacific, says that doesn't mean people should be complacent.
The epidemic is far from over in Asia and the Pacific. This is going to be a long-term battle, and we cannot let down our guard. We need every country to keep responding according to their local situation, and at the same time, we need every country to keep preparing for large-scale community transmission.
Now, one of the other key issues facing the Pacific is the time it takes for some countries to get suspected cases tested. While Pacific countries have been isolating these suspected cases, in some circumstances, it's taken longer than a week to have samples sent to places like Australia to be tested and for results to be received. Fortunately, most of those suspected coronavirus tests have come back negative. WHO's Dr. Takeshi Kasai says they've been pushing to have the region seen as a high priority by the international partners in order to help Pacific countries speed up the process and be able to carry out their own tests.
Pacific island countries is definitely our priorities, and we're worried. For example, when they wanted to diagnose COVID-19, unlike other countries, they have to ship their samples to outside their countries. And that takes easily 2 weeks. And now, because of there's no availability flight, it's no longer possible to do that. But recently, there's a new diagnostic tool called Gene Expert, which Pacific countries also have the infrastructure. So we really wanted the international community solidarity to prioritize those diagnostic kits to be prioritized to the Pacific Island countries. And we wanted to do our best to make that happen.
There have now been 130 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in the Pacific, not counting Hawaii, Australia or New Zealand, with Guam reporting another 9 cases last night and one more in New Caledonia as well. But it's not all bad news. In Dr. Kasai's opinion, he says he's been impressed by the Pacific's strong sense of community to help reduce the spread of COVID-19.
We also noted that the Pacific has a very important resources called a community. They have a very strong community. And then we've been observing the power of the community whenever they have unfortunately hit by a natural disaster. We're connecting all the Pacific countries once a week and discussing how to prepare, how to respond to situations. And I'm very much impressed that the many Pacific countries are actually engaging a traditional leader, community leaders, women's clubs, or the NGOs to engage the community and be ready. Of course, we continue to be concerned. And they have put in a very strong measure for border closing. But I think we cannot continue this forever. So we have to continue to work all these Pacific Island countries to be also ready for their domestic response.
That was the World Health Organization's Dr. Takeshi Kasai, who is the regional director in the Western Pacific, talking to the media yesterday.
Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
As you just heard, Guam has the highest number of COVID-19 cases in the Pacific. And amongst those 69 confirmed cases are 2 homeless people, which is raising concerns about the spread of the virus among the homeless community there. In other parts of the world, governments are now moving to protect the homeless and to get them off the streets. So what's happening in Guam? Pacific Beat's Catherine Grau joins us now. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning.
What more do we know about the situation in Guam?
Well, that's right. So we have learned this week, as part of the official data that's being released by the Guam government, that 2 people of the now 69 confirmed cases in Guam are people who are considered to be homeless. Now, there are around 900 people who are identified as being homeless in Guam, according to official data. And you can imagine just how hard it is to follow the advice that we're all hearing now of making sure that you stay at home. That's pretty difficult if you don't have a home, but also if you don't have access to a shower or even running water taps, because the message has been quite clear. You need to be washing your hands regularly and do so for at least 20 seconds with soap as well. Now, there are some homeless shelters that are available for people who don't have homes in Guam. They're run generally by the Catholic Church, but we understand they are all full now. Now, the Catholic Church, which of course is the largest church in Guam, there are around 85% of Guam's population are Catholics. Now, the Catholic Church also does have some soup kitchens that they've always been running for the homeless. And so they are still running at the moment. And they've just had to adapt to the new measures that they have for their clients, that the homeless people that they're providing food for. Father Mike Chrysotomo is a vicar for clergy in Guam, but he also heads a ministry to the homeless soup kitchen. And I spoke with him about it.
We also have access, of course, to our soup kitchen so that our homeless are not forgotten during this pandemic situation, because they're the ones out there actually exposed. And so we managed to talk to them. We provided a kitchen, a utility sink kitchen for them to wash their hands, provide sanitizers for them. Their lunch and their meals now are boxed and sanitized in that sense, so that they are, making sure that they are protected, as well as our staff. They wear gloves and they wear masks now.
Yeah, that grab from Father Mike Chrysotomo from the Vicar of the Clergy, just obviously really saying how important these soup kitchens are for Guam's homeless.
Homeless people are out there. They are exposed. And so when I asked him whether he was worried that there could be a real rapid spread of the virus through the homeless community, he said absolutely it is something that they are aware of and trying to deal with. But of course, essential businesses are shut down. The whole of Guam is essentially in lockdown. I wanted to know, as I'm sure many people want to know, where exactly they are going. Here is what Father Mike told me.
Many of them frequently reside either at empty lots or at beaches or at public parks or things like that. We do have several homeless shelters, but they're full at this point. And so the remaining homeless population are out there just struggling themselves. And, you know, just to provide a shelter can be very difficult. And even if we were to provide a shelter, the government may try to do that. Our concern, again, is social distancing. And will that be more hazardous to them? So we're even reviewing that. We're working with the government to put together a distribution food center for the homeless so that they have more access to food and healthcare. So those are things in the making right now that we're trying to put together. But the point is trying to control the spread. And I think that's the government's concern right now.
It's interesting, Father Mike, saying there the controlling the spread, because as we know in Guam and across the world, that one way that the government in Guam is trying to control the spread is by making public spaces like parks and beaches off limits. But we also heard him say that that's exactly where homeless people have often camped and squatted, not just in Guam. I know living here in Australia, the parks and beaches are very popular. So where are the homeless people going now, Catherine?
That's right. So it's a difficult predicament for these very vulnerable people. And as you say, not just in Guam, we're seeing it right around the world. In Europe, for example, some homeless people are even being issued fines for being outside. That's the case we've seen and heard reports from Italy. In the UK, though, the government there is trying to get people off of the streets. They're moving them into hotels. We're seeing it happen a little bit in Australia as well, not widespread at this stage. There is a pilot by the government in Western Australia that is trying to get people off the streets. It's called Hotels with Heart. In fact, a 5-star hotel is part of the trial, and its general manager is Rob Whedon.
We served them dinner last night and they were fun. They were quirky. They were grateful. They were just delightful. They were relieved to be somewhere that was safe and somewhere that was taking care of them. I can honestly say, as for my 30 years working as a hotelier around the world, yesterday was one of the most rewarding days of my entire career.
Really rewarding there for Rob Whedon here in Australia. It's not something that's happening at this stage in Guam, but Father Mike Chrysostomo did tell me that they've been meeting with the government. They did so earlier this week to discuss exactly what they can do for the homeless community, given there are now those two confirmed cases of homeless people. At this stage, he says that homeless people in Guam, in terms of where they're able to stay that's safe and not out in the public, not at public parks and beaches, they're having to rely on the goodness of people. Here he is.
What I've seen thus far are private owners kind of opening up their lots, or they're, you know, basically not calling the police on when they see, like now our church here, it's an empty church lot, but we've seen an increase of homeless people now residing in the church grounds. And I'm allowing that to happen because where else will they go? And our churches are, you know, is their sanctuary, is their safe place. So I've allowed them to go ahead as long as they keep social distance from each other. And as long as there's an outside sink that we provided for them that they're able to access so they can wash their hands and things like that.
It sounds like it's so important that there are people like Father Mike who are looking out for the homeless people in Guam. But of course, Catherine, this health crisis is also an economic one. And seeing people across the world lose their jobs because of shutdowns, if that's happening in Guam too, there is a risk that there could be more people who end up on the streets.
That's right. It is obviously a risk in Guam as it is elsewhere. At this stage, we already have heard that there are estimated to be thousands of people who've been laid off from their jobs in Guam. Now, because Guam is a US territory, the people there are going to be getting and entitled to unemployment benefits from the mainland US. But Father Mike has said to me that they already have certainly been seeing an increase in demand for their soup kitchens. So he's not saying people are necessarily automatically turning to the streets once they have lost their jobs, but certainly they have found that they have less money to spend on food, so need assistance from their soup kitchen. He says they won't be turning anyone away, but you can imagine that if this goes on for several months, they are going to see growing numbers, which makes it difficult for them to be able to accommodate everyone. At this stage, he says they rely on family volunteers who help get the food ready, but he says they have a backup of a food bank that may last them 2 to 3 months, and they're now in discussions with the government in Guam to see if it can get supplies for the months into the future that the Catholic Church would then help distribute. Mm.
And it does seem like there's going to be a growing demand if the demand is already high at the moment, and no doubt wanting to support Guam's community, such important work that they're doing. Catherine, thank you so much for the update this morning.
My pleasure. Thanks, Talia.
That was Pacific Beat's Catherine Grau with an update of what's happening in Guam.
Practicing good hygiene in public places is very important to slow the spread of coronavirus. When you are outside your home, stay 1.5 meters away from other people. Avoid spitting in public, including after chewing betel nut. Smoking cigarettes is always dangerous, but sharing cigarettes with others can spread the virus, so don't do it. Don't share cups, carver bowls, bottles, or anything else that touches your mouth. Practicing hygiene in public places will help slow the spread of coronavirus.
Time now for a weather update. Neville Coop is the director of Nundrakke Weather and joins us now. Good morning, Neville.
Hi, Talia.
Now, Neville, we're starting to see the first signs of the tropical disturbance we've been talking about near the Solomon Islands.
Yes, that's right. There is a little cluster of clouds now just to the south of Bougainville, sort of roughly on the border there between the eastern parts of PNG and the Solomon. So that's as been predicted by the computer models for some days now, and that's now starting to become a reality.
What effect is it having on places like the Solomon Islands?
Yeah, look, it has been quite wet right across pretty much all of the Solomons and PNG also, with the monsoon fairly active right across that region, extending far west as Papua, West Papua and Papua provinces of Indonesia. So we do have quite a bit of weather extending across then to Vanuatu as well. So that part of Melanesia, very active at the moment, but a lot brighter to the east. There's a bit of rain hanging around the Cook Islands, but other than that, there's really not much to get excited about for our friends in Polynesia. Mm.
And with that tropical disturbance, Neville, any update on the severity or how long it's expected to last for?
Look, there's really two answers to that question. First of all, in terms of the wind strength, it looks like it's probably going to stay around a Category 2, but maybe a Category 3 at this stage. That would be my best estimate. The environment is favourable for development, obviously, for this system, but I don't think it's going to become a really strong Category 5 or anything like that. However, having said that, in terms of rainfall, the computer projections do keep the cyclone slow moving, almost stationary over the weekend, just to the west of the central and northern parts of Vanuatu. And that's problematic because what that means is that there's going to be quite a lot of rain right through the weekend. You're looking at accumulations of 100 millimetres, 150 millimetres or more per day. So some quite significant rain that's going to last for probably 2 or 3 days, and that's going to bring about flooding, landslides and so forth. So that's, I think that the rain and the associated flooding will be the key hazard in this particular situation.
Mm. And no doubt it's going to be a strain on infrastructure, roads and crops around the Pacific as well. Neville, thank you so much for the update, and we'll talk again tomorrow.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Neville Coop there. He's the director of Nundrakke Weather. And for weather updates at any time, you can always visit their Facebook page. You'll find them at Nundrakke Weather. Nundrakke is spelled Nadraki.
Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
You're listening to Pacific Beat. My name is Talia Olatia. Let's have a little bit of a song on this Wednesday hump day that is also April Fool's Day. It's really just all happening today. This is a goodie. It's a song that my brother really likes. So this is a shout out to JP. This is the Jonas Brothers with What a Man Gotta Do.
Cut my heart about 1-2 times. Don't need to question the reason. I'm yours. I'm yours. I'd move the earth to lose a fight just to see you smile. Cause you got no flaws, no flaws. I'm not trying to be your part-time lover. Sign me up for them full-time. I'm yours, all yours. So what a man gotta do, what a man gotta do.
Jonas Brothers there with What a Man Gotta Do. That song always makes me smile. My last trip down to Hobart, I was in the car with my brother. And my brother is like 6 foot plus. He was in his plumber's ute and he was just cranking at this song and the looks that he was getting, you know. Being like a brown person in Hobart, at the best of times you stand out. But when you are dancing behind the wheel of a car to that song of all songs, you definitely do get some strange looks. But, you know, in classic, I think classic Zamorn style, JP just went with it, waved, you know, pointed out to people, having a good time. So, yeah, that song always makes me smile, thinking of him just being an idiot. We all know those people in our lives. That was the wrong one. I really set myself up there. I was like, you know those people who are idiots, and then she presses the wrong button. April Fool's, guys. Oh, that's what I should have said. Perfect cover. That sound means that it's time to find out the stories making news. And to join us, I'm joined by Jordan Fennell. Hello, Jordan.
Hello, Talia. Great April Fool's joke just then.
Oh, my God.
Amazing.
Just so seamless. So got you all out. Everyone was on suspense. Jordan, let's talk about the stories making news today because a New Zealand man has been killed in West Papua. What more do we know?
Yes, New Zealand man Graham Thomas Wall was sadly killed when 8 gunmen attacked workers at the world's largest gold mine, the Freeport Mine in Indonesia's Papua region. He was shot and he died on the way to the hospital, and 2 other Indonesian miners were also critically injured in that attack. The local police chief in the region said that they are still looking for the attackers who escaped into the jungle after the attack. And they say that clashes began last month between Indonesian police force and rebels, essentially, and they've been attacking mines across the region. 2 Indonesian security guards died in attacks at a copper mine in the region last month, and the West Papua Liberation Army has claimed responsibility for these attacks.
No doubt a hard time for the families of those involved, so our thoughts go out to them. Now, Jordan, there isn't a lot of sport happening in the world right now, obviously because of COVID-19, but that won't stop us. from bringing you guys sporting news, because there is a sporting story amongst the non-sport, because researchers have found the earliest polo matches ever played were originally played on donkeys in China. How would they know this?
I know. Crazy, right? And yes, bringing you the important sporting stories you still need to hear on this show. But yeah, like you said, researchers found that originally polo was played on donkeys in ancient China. And although you'd usually associate polo with the British upper class playing on stallions.
Wearing white pants, like exactly. All in white, which
pastel
doesn't seem
colours.
Practical. Beautiful horses.
Sipping champagne as they play polo.
Pinkies out.
US researchers have actually found that the game originated in China. Mm-hmm. It was originally played by high society women in ancient China. And these findings, like you say, how do we know? These findings were based on DNA bones of donkeys found in the tomb of Cuxi, a noblewoman who died in 878 AD.
Wait, so they found donkey bones and figured this out?
Yeah, exactly. They found their bones in her tomb. It didn't really go into
what
further
about
as to how they
donkey just got into her tomb. I mean, obviously this has been peer-reviewed research, and
yes.
So it's obviously legit, but like
these are fair questions, but I think usually when you find animals, like in Egypt, when you find the pharaohs buried with cats, you understand that those animals usually are of high importance to the people. I don't think a donkey just wandered into her tomb and decided to die there.
You don't know. You don't know what the donkey was going through. Could be having an Eeyore situation where
look,
it's just
I'll
like
send an email to these researchers just to be like, are you sure?
Cite your sources. No, obviously it's very legit. And like I said, it would be peer-reviewed research where people who are smart and live in this world would have figured it out. But it is kind of amazing how they can just put those little jigsaw puzzle pieces together and paint whole worlds of what people were doing long before we even existed. So, I mean, we existed, people still existed. Don't know what's happening today. I think it's April Fool's. I also say that Jordan brought me a cupcake this morning and I ate it and it had chocolate in it. So I think I might be experiencing a bit of a sugar rush as well.
Just a small one, yeah. A tiny rush.
Just the smallest amount. But of course, today, Jordan, is April Fool's Day. And usually that means that people and companies around the world would be attempting to play pranks on each other. I know working in the media field, we are often thinking, like when we read a story on April 1st going, wait, is that a legit story or is that not a true story? I'm pretty sure once I reported on a square potato and it didn't exist. There was no such thing as a square potato. I thought someone had read a square potato. And then it was like, no, that was just a very obvious lie. But this year, because of the coronavirus situation, many companies have opted not to do any April Fool's Day jokes. And Google, they've even cancelled theirs. What's going on there?
Yeah, well, Google is usually the biggest prankster of them all. And like you said, companies around the world are usually on April Fool's Day putting out fake announcements or playing elaborate pranks. And last year, Google, for example, put out an advertisement for the Google Tulip, which they claimed was an AI system that would let you talk to your plants. Because, of course, we all need to be in touch with our plants. How are they feeling?
The funny thing is you can talk to your plants already. The question is, will your plants talk back?
Exactly. And that's what they had solved. The plant was talking back. It was saying, I need water. I need sunlight. But of course, it was fake. It wasn't real. But they come up with very detailed and elaborate pranks. But like you said, Google has decided to cancel their April Fool's Day today.
But is this not the time where people need laughter and joy in their lives?
Well, that's my thinking. I think, honestly, I do understand that coronavirus, the situation is very delicate, very sensitive. You don't want to escalate any sort of misinformation, which definitely can happen with April Fool's Day pranks. But I think if companies were staying away from coronavirus as a topic, and you were just bringing something lighthearted like, hey, you can talk to your plants today. That is the joy that people need in these dark times.
And the idea that you could do that or something that you could do around the house that would just be fun. That also, yeah, I think it is obviously a very fine line. And it's a line that we even here at Pacific Beat are trying to always balance to be like, how do we bring you both the light, what we call it, the light and the shade? Because like too much of bad news is like too much for your brain to cope with. But then you don't want to trivialise what's happening either. So it is a very fine line. I do wonder if like maybe Google's pulling out, maybe other people. Maybe this is the time for like, you know, search engines of old, like Ask Jeeves. They can come out with that.
Or Bing could have a resurgence.
Maybe this is their time. It is not their time. Sorry, ask Jeeves and Bart. Let's be honest, who everyone's favourite search engine is. But yeah, it is really interesting. And I think it is showing how different brands, different companies are having these conversations of how do we still be who we are in this world that is changing, and how do we, address that line of who we need to be for people in this time of great uncertainty. It's a big question that's out there.
Exactly. I'll still be looking around to see if there are any April Fool's Day pranks out there, because I'm keen. I love this day.
Absolutely. And just a warning, if there is anything about a square potato, they don't exist. They just don't.
Cite your sources.
Cite your sources. Very important lesson that we've learned today. Jordan, thank you so much for bringing us those stories.
No worries.
That was Jordan Fennell there with just some of the stories making news today. Shortly, we're going to find out from the Fiji Disabled People's Federation about COVID-19 messaging, saying that it needs to be more inclusive to persons with disabilities.
The Pacific region has recorded cases of coronavirus, so it's important to know what to do if you feel sick. If you are feeling unwell with mild symptoms such as a cough, cold or runny nose, you should stay home. Always sneeze and cough into your elbow or shoulder. If you develop more serious symptoms such as a fever or difficulty breathing, you should contact your local health service immediately. Looking after yourself can help protect you and your community from the coronavirus.
You're listening to Pacific Beat. My name is Talia Olatia. Now, being a journalist, I often take for granted how easy it is for me to access the news. I have a lot of family members whose first language isn't English, so I'd like to think that I'm a little bit woke in that way in when it comes to translating news stories. But the honest truth is that I don't automatically think about how people with disabilities might access the news that I report on. I mean, right now, the fact that you can hear my voice on your radio assumes that you don't have hearing difficulties. When I tell you to visit our Facebook page, it assumes that you aren't vision impaired. And it's something that I'm really working on. And it's something that the Pacific Disability Forum is urging all Pacific governments and territories to work on as well, to ensure that persons with disability are included in their COVID-19 planning, response and actions. Lenietta Tuimambu is the office manager for Fiji's Disabled People's Federation in the Shifting the Power Coalition, and I spoke to her earlier.
Right now, the organisation has been working with Pacific Disability Forum, Pacific Emergency Response Unit, in terms of the messaging, communication, and easy-to-read messaging that Pacific Disability Forum has been assisting us to share with persons with disability in Fiji.
Because obviously disability comes on a spectrum, so there are different people who have different disabilities. But there's also when it comes to the containment measures that might be mentioned. So when you're encouraging people to socially distance themselves, that might be hard for a person with a disability who relies on someone else to be within that 1.5 metres to help them.
Yeah, that's really correct, because when the do's and don'ts, the don'ts, quite challenging for us persons with disability. For me, myself, I'm a woman with a visual impairment. So at times I would need sighted guide. And one of the don'ts is, nobody touching, but then I need to hold by the elbow, or those who are cared for 24/7. They would still need their personal assistance or their carer. Or their family member to assist them. And then also looking at the discrimination that comes with it. Quite critical that in this pandemic that we are not further discriminated against.
Which is so important, because a lot of people with disabilities generally have higher rates of unemployment. They might be poorer. So this could make them feel extremely more vulnerable if they like they can't access services or information that is designed for them and what they can do.
Yes, correct. And that is why the organisation is really working really hard to ensure that all people with disabilities receive the accessible information and communication materials or resources that are given out, and even through the Ministry of Health and National Disaster Management Office and other ministries that are working on this area. And I think one of the other critical areas that I also would like to share is our involvement in the, you know, if there are any cases of gender-based violence and COVID. So we are part of the working group to ensure that service delivery protocol services that will be handling cases of domestic or GBV gender-based violence due to COVID is inclusive of disability and would be able to also serve the, those with women, children with disabilities.
So if there are people with disabilities across the Pacific who are listening to this interview now and are thinking, what can I do or what can I say to the people around me so that they still know how that they can help me and be safe doing so, is there any advice that you can give to those people?
Well, my advice is that if you have a disability or not, it doesn't limit you from having the virus, eh? So my word is that please do follow the instructions that are given by your local national Ministry of Health or the WHO, the simple steps of what you need to do and what you not need to do. And always make sure that whenever you are faced with, you know, the symptoms, please visit your nearest health centers or the fever clinics that has been set up for example, in Fiji, we have the fever clinic to take yourself there and not be scared of the virus and not, you know, don't feel too strange about it. But in the long term, if you take it quickly. But my also advice is that if you are needing support, it's better to always inform the service providers or the health officials what are your accessibility needs, so that health providers can better assist you and better serve you.
And I think a big key thing there is just to talk, even just like working through mental health issues with the accumulated stress, that maybe sometimes there isn't an easy solution, like the government implementing something, but sometimes maybe just talking about it might help alleviate that stress, which is true for people with disabilities and without disabilities, but it is still important to talk about how you're feeling.
Yes, very important is to share. And not keep it to yourself and share it with who you're comfortable with. And maybe that person can share it if you're not comfortable to share directly. But it's very important to share what you're going through. And as a person with disability is to make sure that service providers and members of the public do understand our needs and hear it directly from persons with disability.
Yeah. Have any of the Pacific governments responded to your call to be more inclusive of persons with disabilities during these COVID-19 messages?
I can talk for Fiji because I must say that the Fiji government is quite open in terms of disability inclusion, but it's from us as disabled people's organization to be also part of those different levels of communication with our various governments, our departments. We need to engage with them so that they can better understand our issue and how can they be more inclusive in the approach that they're taking in terms of COVID-19.
Some important messages there. That was Lanieta Tuimambo, the Office Manager for Fiji Disabled People's Federation in the Shifting the Power Coalition, and she was talking to me earlier.
Coronavirus ME1 plan nuclear virus of Binetang ways have come up in sick one kind of some sick flu. It may can come up in Bagara Plong on Lapun, no line of city got sick, penis. Here I'm sample something where you can make him long stopping round blong display sick. Washing man blong you want them soap mark long 20 seconds, stop long way long online, no can go round long on public place, no can all him eye, nose, no mouse blong you, na time you like kus you go inside long hand blong you. Suppose you pan him heart long pulling wind, go long out sick or else Santa Claus to long you na kiss him help him.
I'm Talia Olatia. This is Pacific Beat. As the coronavirus pandemic wreaks havoc around the world as we know it, a lot of things are being put on hold. But a grassroots initiative in the Australian city of Logan in the south of Brisbane has been trying to push on with its plans to work with young Pacifica and Māori youth who have found themselves on the wrong side of the law. More than 40% of Logan's young people are out of work, and rates of drug-related crime are among the highest in the state. But the non-profit Christian organisation Kingdom Community Life Care wants to make a difference in young people's lives, as Kelvin Anthony reports.
Grace is the mother of 17-year-old Ben, who's been in and out of the juvenile justice system for the last few years. She says she's long tried to help him turn his life around.
I tried to bring him to everything, but sometimes he is the one that doesn't want to do it.
Grace believes her son found himself on the wrong side of the law because he never had a role model.
My son, he grew up with his mother. He needed a male to show him how to be a man, but he never had anyone to look up.
Logan City is a buzzing Australian city with a population of over 327,000 people, located between Brisbane and the Gold Coast. It's a melting pot of people representing more than 200 different cultures, but it has an unpleasant problem.
Kids as young as 10 years old ending up in juvenile justice.
Violet Langan is a member of the Pacific Islands Council of Queensland, an organisation that works with the state and federal government to address issues affecting Pacific Islander communities. She's also a pastor and founding director of the non-profit Kingdom Community Life Care, where she works to support children and young people like Ben who are trapped in a life of crime.
Most of these children, they've had to fend for themselves. They've developed a lifestyle for survival.
There are about 20,000 Pacific Islanders living in Logan City. They make up nearly one-fifth of the state's total Pacific Islander population. Ms. Langan says up to three-quarters of the Pacifica and Maori young people who are part of the juvenile justice system will end up in jail. She says there's an urgent need for early intervention.
When they get released from juvenile justice, 72 hours, if we don't have a safe place, they end up back in the system and it's an everlasting revolving door.
Robert Jelena is the co-founder of the Kingdom Community Life Care and has first-hand experience working with the Department of Youth Justice in Logan. He says for young people, reoffending is a significant issue.
Generally speaking, it comes down to the lack of support or education that they have in the family home, and then it filters out to getting involved in gangs.
The Queensland government has set a target of reducing reoffending by children and young people aged 10 to 15 by 5% by 2022. Ms. Langan and Mr. Jelena hope their grassroots initiative will assist troubled young people turn their lives around by providing them with life skills, training, and a space to live.
We have a property in Marsden where we can engage them in projects. We can provide them with shelter and we can provide them with food.
We will train our children, actually teach them again the basics where we have English and math as our basic curriculum, and then find out what their talents and abilities are.
Ms. Langan says she wants all Pacifica children in Logan to find their identity and purpose in life.
Children are a gift from the Lord. I believe as a mum, but also as a grandmother, as an educator, they're our future and they're our hope.
Putting them to good use instead of toward crime and gang and that type of thing.
Mark White is the detective inspector at the Logan Police District. He says Pacific Islander and Maori heritage youth account for about 11% of youth crimes in Logan.
It's a broad range. They range from assault, breaking into houses, stealing a motor vehicle, stealing from motor vehicles, so some robbery offences.
But he says the numbers of youth offenders in all crime class in Logan have decreased by 7% from 2018 to 2019.
We have quite a number of programs and quite a number of strategies that we use to try and address youth crime. Our challenges are engaging these young people with the programs that exist in the city of Logan.
Detective Inspector White says the police also work closely with the Pacific Islander community in Logan. He says it's important they collaborate with grassroots-led community initiatives.
We've found that when young people are very engaged and connected with their community, that they often maintain the value of that community and their elders. It is really imperative that we maintain the partnerships that we have with our community groups.
That was Detective Inspector Mark White, ending that report by Kelvin Anthony.
Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
You are listening to Pacific Beat. My name's Talia Olatia. Coming up next, you're going to hear about Yoda the green sea turtle, who got itself into a spot of trouble recently. But before that, my favourite turtle song. Yes, I do have a favourite turtle song. This is Emily Waramara with Imenta Papa Gunawai. Can see why it's one of my favourites. That was Emily Waramara there with Imenta Papa Gunawai, which is actually two songs combined. And Emily Waramara grew up in Groot Island in the Northern Territory, and she was singing there in Anandili Yakwa, the language of her people there, because turtles are important to her people, just like they are in the Pacific, because the turtle is very much a cultural icon. I mean, we use them in our traditions and our stories to symbolise longevity, stamina, tranquility and strength. And when it comes to stamina and strength, Yoda the green sea turtle definitely has it in spades. Yoda has made a remarkable recovery after being found sunburnt, dehydrated and underweight on a central Queensland beach. Yoda the turtle was delivered to the Coin Island Turtle Rehabilitation Centre back in November 2019, covered in barnacles and very underweight for a turtle. He was weighing just 87 kilos. But good news is that 4 months later, Yoda has put on 30 kilos thanks to a high protein diet and is now ready to go back into the water. ABC's Erin Semler has the story.
She came in with no injuries but completely covered in barnacles. So when we first saw her, it looked like she'd just basically got sick and became still in the water. And she was lucky enough to be beached very early. So she came in, she was fairly underweight, at about a bit under 85 kilos. And so it was just a simple treatment. And, you know, we had her back up and running in most probably a month that she got healthy again. And the rest of the time has just been putting fat on.
Do you know why she might have got sick and beached in the first place?
There's no real, we just don't know. It could have been a parasite infestation. It could be anything.
And how old do you think Yoda is?
You never can tell. The guess is in that 50-year bracket. She's at least She's most probably at least 50.
It sounds like she's had quite a quick recovery. How long does it normally take for turtles her size to get better?
Look, our average recovery through the 200-odd turtles that we've had through is about 3 months. So she's sort of on par. She's about 4 months. And it's mainly because she was bigger. She's put on over 30 kilos. So that was the slowest part. It, you know, they're reptiles. They're slow with everything. So, but her recovery's been awesome. She's been a really good patient.
I think the name Yoda might come with a bit of an expectation of a personality. What was she like during her recovery here?
Every one of them has their own personality. She's been the most, I guess, interactive animal that we've pretty much ever had. You know, she just loved her scratches and tickles, and she would actually, you know, she can grab your hand with her rear flippers and hold on while you scratch her. And so, yeah, she's just loved the human interaction, so to look after her. And now she doesn't like it. So she's it's clear when they're ready to go home, and they go home to nature perfectly well.
So how have you found Yoda's personality?
She's a bit different to everybody else. She's the equivalent of a Labrador under the water, I suppose. Since she started to get a bit healthier, she started to get a little less touchy-feely with us, which is kind of a good sign that she's sick of her pool life and she wants to go back in the wild. But she's been really interactive, yeah.
And what was it like when you first met her? What was she like?
So Yoda, she was obviously quite underweight when she got here, quite skinny. So she had a while to go in terms of, you know, putting on all that weight. For a big turtle, it takes a lot of time. So she took to eating squid pretty quickly, though. Within a few days, she was eating. So she was like a Hoover vacuum. As soon as she started eating, she just was putting on the weight. Didn't take her long to get out of the ICU tanks and into the pool. So we haven't really had any real backward steps or issues with her. She's just been upwards in trajectory, basically, yeah, since we got her, which has been great.
And yep. How do you feel about her being released today?
This is since I've been here, and Hayley, my wife, that's the first really big turtle we've released, so it's just a really, really good feeling, especially because she's a big nesting female, you know, so that's what she's put in the earth to do, to reproduce, so hopefully she can go back and do that once she's in the water again, yeah.
What's the main dangers for her when she's heading back out there?
The biggest issue that we face that is clearly known is a recreational fisherman. That's their biggest danger in the ocean. Just there's a constant risk with discarded fishing line in where people have cut off, you know, 50 or 100 meters at a time. They get wrapped in it, and you know, we've got a number of animals with amputated limbs because of it, and you know, so it's not just the fishing hook, it's the fishing lines that they leave behind, and the boat strikes, obviously. That's clearly a major issue at the moment. It's the biggest now that we've ever had. So with her release, our overarching message to everyone out there is, especially the fishermen, is bring your rubbish home. Don't let the fishing line stay in the water, or the hooks, or the crab pots. They kill thousands of these animals every year, and they know nothing about it. Fishing line stays; it's going to stay there for another 1,000 years. So we've got that issue to face over a long, long time yet. So just be careful, be mindful.
It sounds like you're a little bit attached to her. Do you think there'll be any emotions when you watch her swim away?
Yeah, definitely. It's a pretty rewarding feeling seeing a turtle come in and see it come out the other side. Yeah, there'll definitely be emotions. I don't know what sort, probably just relief. It might sound weird, but I don't want to see her again. So, yeah, if you know what I mean. I mean that in a good way, so yeah. I think Yoda's going to swim straight out when we let her go, and she probably won't even look back at us, to be honest. And that's a good sign that she's going to live a really long life.
That's a really beautiful story, weirdly tearing up at the end. And he's hoping that we don't see Yoda again. Well, if we do, because she is a Pacific turtle, that we see her out there in the ocean living her best life. That was ABC's Erin Semler there with that story. And if you want to see photos of Yoda, head on over to the ABC News webpage. You'll find it at www.abc.net.au/news.
Maintaining a safe distance between yourself and others is very important to slow the spread of coronavirus. When saying hello and goodbye to people you meet, it's important not to shake hands, hug, or kiss. A safer way to greet people is to simply wave and smile without touching. If you are interacting with someone who is coughing or sneezing, you should avoid physical contact entirely and stay 1.5 meters away from them. This will reduce the chance of spreading the virus.
Important messages that we will be repeating here on ABC Radio Australia. That is all for Pacific Beat 4 this morning. Don't forget that Richard Ewart will be along at 3 p.m. PNG time for the afternoon edition of Pacific Beat. So keep listening to ABC Radio Australia and make sure you follow and like the ABC Radio Australia Facebook page so you can ensure that you get the latest news and developments from around the region. Have a good day and I'll catch you tomorrow.